Okay, good morning, everyone. Thank you, Elena. It is great to be here. Thank you so much. So we already went through the name of my talk, so I'm just going to get started right away. So neonatal herpes simplex virus has significant morbidity and mortality even with current viral therapy. Depending on the clinical presentation, mortality can be as high as 30%, and permanent neurologic defects occur in 20% of surviving infants. An infant with disseminated disease and erosions of the skin is shown in the photo on the right here. Neonatal herpes simplex is not currently a nationally notifiable disease in the United States, although some states are reporting herpes, neonatal herpes. So reported incidences vary. Depending on the definition that's used and the population that's studied, incidences have been reported to be anywhere between 8 to 60 cases per 100,000 live births. Neonatal herpes simplex infection is usually acquired, but not always, when an infant comes into contact with herpes simplex virus, or HSV, 1 or 2 during vaginal delivery. This photo demonstrates a vulvar outbreak of herpes simplex. So with current practices, mothers who have primary genital herpes infection with either HSV 1 or 2 close to the time of delivery have the highest risk, 30 to 60%, of transmission of HSV to their infants, likely due to the absence of maternal antibodies. Again, with current practices, among women with recurrent genital herpes outbreaks at delivery, there's a 3% risk of transmission. And finally, women who are seropositive for HSV but are asymptomatic, so no signs or symptoms of herpes outbreak at delivery, they may still have viral shedding. And even though the risk of transmission is low in this population, less than 1%, it does still occur. And these are the women who are most difficult to identify and treat with current practices. HSV screening during pregnancy is controversial, both because false positive serologic tests are common in low prevalence populations, and because many questions remain about ideal screening and management following that screening. So for example, should suppressive viral therapy be offered in the absence of recurrent outbreaks? Given that 1/3 to 1/2 of neonatal herpes is due to HSV-1, should we screen for HSV-1, and then what do we do with those results? And should we screen for viral shedding during labor, which has been suggested as a way to really find those women who are asymptomatic but still shedding virus? The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, or ACOG, is an organization that prenatal care physicians who regularly provides practice guidelines. The 2007 guidelines on management of genital herpes during pregnancy update guidelines that were originally published in 1999. The two guidelines with the highest level of evidence are rated level B, which means that they are based on limited or inconsistent scientific evidence. They are that women with active recurrent genital herpes should be offered suppressive viral therapy at or beyond 36 weeks of gestation. And second, that cesarean delivery is indicated if, at the time of delivery, a woman has active genital lesions or prodromal symptoms suggesting a genital herpes outbreak. The following two recommendations have levels of evidence rated C, meaning that the recommendation is based on consensus and expert opinion. Cesarean delivery is not recommended for women with a history of HSV, but no active disease during labor. And routine HSV screening of pregnant women is not recommended. I'd like to add here that the CDC treatment guidelines from 2010 also support the ACOG guidelines and say that at delivery, women without signs or symptoms of genital herpes or its prodrome can deliver vaginally. The CDC guidelines don't make specific recommendations about the use of antiviral medications or screening, other than noting that viral therapy can reduce the frequency of outbreaks near term, and that some specialists do screen for HSV during pregnancy. However, this area is evolving, and providers' screening practices and management of genital herpes in pregnancy is largely unknown. So this brings us to our study objectives, which were to describe prenatal care providers' practices surrounding the management of genital herpes during pregnancy and at delivery, and to determine if these practices are in agreement with ACOG guidelines. The Maternal Health and Delivery Study is a longitudinal survey of prenatal caregivers' practices. Data were collected from 2007 to 2009 by Battelle Center for Public Health Research and Evaluation. Our current analysis looked only at the questions for providers surrounding management of genital herpes in pregnancy and at delivery. A convenience sample of prenatal care physicians was selected from a list of all practicing physicians in 62 counties in 6 geographically diverse states and the District of Columbia. The sample in each county was stratified by primary specialty, including general practice, family practice, internal medicine or obstetrics gynecology, and the type of employment, meaning solo practice, private group practice, or hospital-based practice. The survey was mailed to the selected physicians who had the option to answer on paper or online, and there were 294 survey participants. So now we'll move on to our results, starting with the demographics of the physicians who responded. The responding physicians were 52% female, and their mean number of years practicing in their specialty was 15.6, with a range of 1 to 36 years. 91.8 reported that they were currently performing deliveries at the time of the survey, and 86.7 were board certified in their specialty, and 73.8% were members of ACOG. So each of the next three slides are set up the same way, with the survey question at the top and the physician's answers on the bottom. Here we see physicians' answers to the question, what proportion of pregnant patients do you screen for HSV2? The answers are mixed. The majority of physicians report testing none, almost none, or a few of their patients, while 14% of physicians report testing all or almost all of their patients for antibodies to HSV2. This graph shows physicians' answers to the question, how often do you prescribe oral suppressive viral therapy to your patients with symptomatic genital herpes at the end of pregnancy? And 89% of physicians report that they always or almost always prescribe this therapy to these patients. And finally, here we see physicians' answers to the question, how often do you prescribe oral suppressive viral therapy to your patients with positive serologic tests for HSV2, but no symptomatic genital herpes at the end of pregnancy? And 60% of physicians report that they always or almost always prescribe suppressive viral therapy to these patients. The remaining 40% of physicians' answers are split across all the other categories of never, almost never, infrequently, sometimes, and usually. The next two slides shows physicians' answers to the question, is the following a firm indication by itself for cesarean delivery, specifically to prevent neonatal herpes? Starting with patient history of genital herpes, 5.1% of physicians answered that this was a firm indication for cesarean delivery, but this is not an indication per ACOG guidelines. The next possible indication was a patient with a history of a sex partner with genital herpes, and only 3.1% of physicians answered that this was a firm indicator for cesarean delivery. This is also not an indication per ACOG guidelines. The next possible indication was positive serologic test for HSV2 antibody. Only 2% of physicians answered that this was a firm indication for cesarean delivery. And again, it's not an indication per ACOG guidelines. Next, we have observation of genital herpes lesions near term or during labor, and 91.5% of physicians answered that yes, this was a firm indication for cesarean delivery, and as you likely remember, this is in fact an indication per ACOG guidelines. And our last possible indicator was patient history of symptoms that suggest a herpes outbreak near term. So 64.6% of physicians answered that yes, this was a firm indication for cesarean delivery, and again, it is an indication per ACOG guidelines. So I just want to summarize with these two slides to kind of put this in perspective in relation to the levels of evidence with these guidelines. So for the evidence level B guidelines, 90% of physicians' practices are in agreement with the two guidelines that you see there. Women with active recurrent genital herpes should be offered suppressive viral therapy at or beyond 36 weeks, and cesarean delivery is indicated if at the time of delivery a woman has active genital lesions. And again, the majority of physicians' practices were in agreement with the guideline that cesarean delivery is indicated if at the time of delivery a woman has prodromal symptoms, such as vulvar pain or burning. But 35% of physicians didn't recognize prodromal symptoms as an indication for cesarean delivery. For the evidence level C guidelines, 95% of physicians' practices are in agreement with cesarean delivery not being recommended for women with a history of HSV but no active disease during labor. And some physicians are screening some patients, and a few physicians are screening all patients, while the guideline is routine HSV screening of pregnant women is not recommended. An area not addressed by the ACOG guidelines is whether or not viral therapy should be used in asymptomatic women. What we saw in the survey was that even in the absence of symptomatic recurrent genital herpes, most physicians use suppressive viral therapy in HSV2 seropositive women at the end of pregnancy. Overall, our analysis demonstrated that responding physicians reported practices are generally in agreement with ACOG guidelines, and the areas where practices diverge from ACOG guidelines are areas that either require further research to determine best practices or areas that require provider education to alert physicians to the established best practices. Our study does have several limitations. One, survey participants may not be representative of all prenatal care providers in the United States. And two, providers' reports may not accurately reflect their actual practices. And finally, questions asked only about HSV2, but a significant portion of neonatal herpes simplex infection are due to HSV1, and it will be important to get information about practices around HSV1. So with our conclusions and limitations in mind, we have several recommendations. Our recommendations fall into two broad categories, areas for future research and areas for provider education. As part of future research, we specifically recommend monitoring outcomes in asymptomatic women treated with suppressive viral therapy at the end of pregnancy, as well as research evaluating new approaches to identify asymptomatic women who are at risk to transmit HSV to their infants, including specifically research around the newly developed rapid HSV PCR tests that can screen for viral shedding in the genital tract at delivery. We also recommend provider education specifically around recognizing prodromal symptoms as indication for cesarean delivery and balancing the risk of neonatal herpes in specific populations against risks associated with viral therapy and cesarean delivery. I'd like to thank my abstract co-authors as well as all of my colleagues in Atlanta and at Battelle. Thank you.
If anyone has questions for Dr. Interqueso, you can come up to the mic. We have about 3 minutes.
Hi, Julie Schillinger from New York City. Camille, that was really fantastic and very interesting. We've wondered a lot about many of these questions locally. I just want to make sure I understood. A very small minority of the respondents said that they were doing routine screening, herpes serologic screening during pregnancy. But among those, they were very likely to put a woman on suppressive therapy. Is that right? So the actual number and the number of patients that this affects is the minority.
Well, I think it's the minority who are doing screening. But this question was actually asked to all 294 respondents. So I think what we can conclude is that if women have a positive serologic test for HSV2, whether their prenatal care provider ordered it or whether they have it from a different provider or from the past from a different reason, just based on that result, 60% of physicians are putting, or 60% of the responding physicians reported putting those women on suppressive viral therapy.
Okay.
So it's actually the majority of women who do test positive for HSV2, no matter who ordered that test.
And on what basis it was ordered.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, and then sort of related, I'm just interested in these obstetricians who are doing this routine screening. Did you have a chance yet, and maybe it's on your roster, to compare those obstetricians to others along all these different practices?
So that's a great question, and one of the things that we have planned for future analysis, and we're hoping that a publication will come from this work, so I hope to have answers for you in the future, but I don't have any information right now.
Okay,
but
thank you.
Good, it's a great suggestion.
One more minute.
Okay. Hi, I was just wondering, when you had stated that false positives are common in low prevalence populations with HSV2 serology, I was just wondering what the false positive rate was and in what populations, because I know that the CDC last year had stated that it was about 16% prevalence in women, so that seems like kind of a high population. I was just curious.
Yes, absolutely. And that is a great question. I don't have any slides prepared specifically to answer it. And it depends a lot on the population. One of the problems, and this is probably something that many members of the audience are aware of, is that in the package instructions for one of the commonly used HSV2 screening serologies, there's debate about what the cutoff for a positive versus a negative should be. And so in some, it depends a lot on how you interpret what a positive or a negative should be. So you're right, the HSV2 seropositivity is high in the U.S. In women. So I can't give you a specific number right now, but I can talk with you a little later about some more studies. Thank you.